SOSMA was first proposed in 2012 as a replacement for the Internal Security Act, which allowed for detention without trial. It was implemented in June of 2012 by the Najib Razak government. Essentially, the root of the law is based on a constitutional provision that provides broad powers against subversion, threats to public order, acts of terrorism, sabotage and espionage. Why is it controversial? It gives police wide powers to detain any individual whom they deem or believe to be involved in security offences without a warrant. Essentially, the first objection we have is that they can be obtained for 28 days without a court order before they are brought before a court. And after 28 days, there are various powers that the court has. They may be charged for an offence under SOSMA. And essentially, the objections that we have is that when someone is charged under SOSMA, firstly, there's no bail allowed. Secondly, even if they're acquitted at the first instance in the lower court, they will have to remain in remand until the final disposal of the case. So if it starts with the sessions court, then the final disposal will be at the Court of Appeal. Yeah? And another big objection we have is that there's delay in proceedings. Some of them have been held for up to 3 years and the cases have not started in court yet. The government justifies it by saying that it is a court process, and it allows, SOSMA allows a court process to take place. This is a fallacy for many reasons. One is, in normal criminal offences, bail would be allowed in most cases. That's number one. And even for the most serious offences like murder or 39B, for instance, if you're acquitted at the first instance, you're released. There's no continuous remand until the matter is disposed at the final court of determination. What we need to look at is also that it has been in place for the more than 10 years now, from 2012. We have 300 over detainees, I think. And let's look at the effect. Has there been a reduction in terms of crime? And that's number one. What statistics have the government got to show us that with the detention or arrest of these people, the level of crime has been reduced in Malaysia? That's number one. Number two, they should also release a study carried out to show that they were all arrested in different parts of Malaysia. And allegedly involved in gangsterism, offences against security and threats to national security in that sense. Are they gang leaders? If you look at the socio-economic background of the detainees, in our record, Swakam's record, only one person has also been charged with the offence of AMLA. So it would seem that 95-98% of everyone who's been arrested under SOSMA and charged come from maybe the middle class, low middle class, or B40. Surely they cannot be gang leaders. Surely they cannot be the mastermind behind organized crime in Malaysia. If you look at those who are involved, I mean, what about the gambling syndicates? What about the drug trafficking syndicates? What about prostitution? What about trafficking of persons, right? The biggest players are all out there. And who are you actually targeting with SOSMA? You seem to be targeting the poorest, the weakest, and the most vulnerable people in society. Yeah, they may be involved in petty crime. I mean, possible. It's a possibility. But should they not be given the benefit of the doubt, and they should be innocent until proven guilty? There are various other laws that can be used against these people. Yeah, and you have held them for 3 years now, some of them. Isn't it such a grave injustice that you have not allowed them to meet their families, their children? And what we have seen is that most of them were breadwinners for the family. And because of their arrest, families have gone into turmoil, complete disruption of family life. Mothers now have to go to work. Children have not seen their father in years. And no more breadwinner. So they have to look at alternate sources of income. And most difficult, of course, is that because these crimes, they're charged under very serious offences, it's so difficult for them to afford to pay a lawyer to defend their cases. And they do not have a team of a group of lawyers who can come and defend them. So again, the right to legal representation under the federal constitution, equal equality before the law, all these are fallacies because it doesn't exist for people who come from the lower income group who are charged under the criminal justice system. So we're happy to hear that the Deputy Law Minister, Ram Karpal, has stated that there would be some major amendments proposed. And what we'd like the government to do is this: give us justification in terms of statistics, give us justification in terms of who these people you have arrested, and have they actually crippled all these major gangs in Malaysia? Has there been a massive reduction of gambling, illegal gambling, massive reduction of drug trafficking, massive reduction in terms of trafficking in person? And what about those people who are involved in these huge, huge underground activities? Have they been targeted? Has any one big time leader of these gangs, these syndicates, been arrested under SOSMA? So why is the target only the vulnerable, the easiest persons you can target? And what justification is there to hold them for such a long time?
Hello, I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. You just heard the Sohakam Commissioner Raghunath Kesavan talking about the Security Offences Special Measures Act, or SOSMA, here at the launch of Suara Rakyat Malaysia, Suaram's report on the socio-economic impact of detention under SOSMA. It's the first report of its kind since SOSMA came into force more than 10 years ago in 2012. Now, SOSMA, as you heard, is a controversial procedural law that allows for up to 28 days of detention, arrest without a warrant before heading to court. My first guest today to talk a little bit about the socioeconomic impact of detention under SOSMA is independent researcher and author of the report, Siti Noriza Mohamad Tazali. Iza, thank you for joining me on the show today. This is a remarkable report because most of the conversations around SOSMA has been focused on the legal aspect of SOSMA, but this really puts into perspective the human side, the socioeconomic impact of this law on detainees and their families. Tell me, what were the main takeaways that you think are important to highlight from this report?
All right, thank you, Melissa. First of all, I would like to say that before reporting for the research, what is actually vital is for us to documenting the pain of the people who had been convicted as detainee, as convicted of the SOSMA Act. Mm. And one of the things that impacted most of them is on the income, because most of them are the breadwinner of the family, and also they are the most of people are being dependent of them. This could be like from their wife, from their mothers, and also like their siblings. Mm. So when they are being impacted by this SOSMA Act, what happened to them is that when they go outside, they have to be in the gig economy, which actually is very hard for them to survive in the outside. And some of the stories are that when they went out after SOSMA, it's during the pandemic. Yeah. So it's double the burden for the people who are being convicted by the Act. And the second things that being impacted for their families and all the detainees, either they are ex-convict or ex-detainees, is that on the costs related to the detention, which can occur into two places, which is the first one is the cost of visiting, which could be which one of the respondent had shared with us that the most cost that they had to spend is around RM1,000 per month. And also the second part is on the cost of legal fee, which one of the cases, what had been shared to us is that the total cost is for, is the total cost for the legal cost is for RM150,000.
Astronomical figure. Okay, I just want to come back to some of the things that you mentioned. So the impact on income, what I didn't know until I heard the findings of your research was that most, a large part of the people detained under SASMA are from the most underprivileged, are from a B40 background, and that compounds the socioeconomic impact. Tell me a little bit about, the other thing I didn't realize was what happens is the accounts are frozen and therefore they are shut out of the banking system. What did you realize in your research about this disproportionate impact to the very underprivileged communities?
So I think like one of the impact on the frozen of the account is that not only it happened to the detainee, but it's also happened to the family. When one in the cases that we did is that they cannot take out the money and they cannot survive for a long time because there are no money, there are no money that they can take out from the bank.
You also mentioned 150,000 for legal fees.
Yep.
That they doesn't seem to. Who would have 150,000 ringgit in cash lying around to pay for legal fees?
Yeah, that's why I think like one of the thing on the income impact is that it's a chain actually for the family. Mm. So first you lost the income. Second, you have to sell everything that you have. Then this includes like all the jewelries, like some maybe have what we call peternakan. Mm. They had to sell everything.
Kerbau, livestock,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And tanah as well. They have
and
to sell
tanah,
whatever assets
they have.
Can you talk to me about what you discovered in your research about the impact to the family members, particularly to the children and their dependents?
Yeah, I think like one of the most thing that also impacted me is like this is the manifestation of the operation that we have, that if we don't sit down, if we don't ask them, we didn't know about the story. So children also are being impacted by the act, which actually affecting their physically, emotionally, and also like their schools. And some of the families, they had to change their kids' school from one place to one place. And one of the family during the town hall, what they shared is that two of their sons had been arrested and charged for 25 years. In the court.
Right.
So during that time, it was like a very big time for like people are using SOSMA to take everyone, right? So what happened is that they bring their kids to different states
to escape
move
the stigma
and to also move out from the school that they had been there for a while.
Okay.
Because they don't want them or the kids, what we call?
To get the stigma of...
No, the kids' friends, to ask them either, where's your father? So they have to move their kids from that school.
Can I also ask you the impact on families and relationships? Because when you talked about how children are also impacted by this act, it's a cycle. So they lose interest in school, they drop out of school, they maybe, you know, move into a life of crime. Talk to me about also the relationship within the family unit.
All right. I think like one of the relationship that happened, if you are a husband and wife, most of the respondents that I had interviewed had being divorced or in the process of the divorce.
Okay.
And some of them are really being supported by the family. But in terms of like partnership, most of them are divorce or in the process of divorce.
So marriages have broken up over this. What is it that you think they want out of this research, your research, out of publishing this report? What are the people, your respondents, hoping for, Isa?
I think one of the biggest thing that they are hoping for is that for their son or their their son to come back to their home. That's the only thing that they want. Because even though, like, when I discussed just now, there are, like, many, so many things, right? So, but one of them is just to have their son back, to support them and to live together again.
Do you think that people watching tonight will be persuaded by the socioeconomic argument? As opposed to, you know, we've been talking about the about legal reform, we've been talking about the human rights angle. Mm-hmm. Do you think upon hearing the impact to people, detainees and their families and their children might be persuaded by this research?
What I have in mind now mm-hmm. is that when I did the interview, what I have in mind is that these people are actually the normal people like us. Mm-hmm. They have a family. They have people. They are the people who supported the family. They have children. They have many other responsibilities, same like us. Mm. And if it's not like persuading people, but actually, from my point of view, I think naming the pain is the first step that we need to take in order to move forward. Because sometimes people are not familiar. Because sometimes, if you ask about people, what is the socioeconomic impact? Mm. Where is the impact? We don't see anything in the media. So this is the first step to move forward. That so we are naming the pain here so that the society can know, society can understand better and supporting the family.
Isa, thank you for your All work right. and thank you for talking to me.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break here and consider this. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Joining me now is Executive Director of Swaram, Seven Doraisamy. Seven, thank you for taking time after the launch of the report on the socioeconomic impact of detention and DSOSMA to talk to me a little bit about the insights based on this report. I want to ask you, because what I found interesting in this report was the framing, the narrative of the conversation, trying to pivot that conversation from talking about kind of a legal or institutional reform to the impact on people, on the detainees, former detainees, and on their family members. Why do you think the human rights angle hasn't persuaded people to care about repealing this act? And why do you think a socioeconomic angle might be the way to persuade society to push for this?
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you for continuous support on this issue. That's a very good question and not an easy one. Because those days when we were fighting against ISA, it's the former detention without trial laws, right? It was very kind of easier, although we had the tough time, but it's kind of easier to get the public perception, to change the public perception, because ISA was consistently misused against political opponents, members from civil society. But where else? Probably the government learned from their past mistake. When they introduced SOSMA, they clearly said FOSMA won't be used against political opponent. And that point of time, it was an international threat of IS, and it was spoken everywhere. Mm. Right? So the government used that opportunity to introduce SOSMA, and they promised that SOSMA won't be used against political opponents. It will be focusing on terrorism as part of the national counter-terrorism measurement, and hence SOSMA was introduced. We still oppose because of the nature of 28 days remand. It's contradict with the usual practice and non-bailable and all this. But then the public, with the fear of IS and also the Jakarta bombing and a few things, they kind of like, okay, fine, I think SOSMA is good.
Right.
And that kind of a perception. And we know it's definitely because of the past experience, it's going to be misused again and again. And for our worry, it happened.
Okay, so Swaram is worried about the abuse of this very problematic law against political dissenters, as has happened in the past. But we've had in the past few days the Deputy IGP Ayub Khan talking about how actually SOSMA is still needed, particularly to fight organized crime. How would you respond?
Yep. The first thing is even if he use SOSMA, he definitely going to charge someone using penal code.
Because it's a procedural law.
Yes.
Okay.
So it means the law to charge someone under trafficking and all that is already in a penal code. So why you need to this procedure? Because it's giving ample of power to the police to use, right? To use and investigate. But we have proven there's so many misuse of power happening. Okay. So that's the question. Yes, he wanted to use penal code. Go ahead, you know. But why you wanted to use SOSMA? Because it's giving a lot of power. And you have heard a lot of issue regarding the 28 days torture
right.
is being practiced, you know.
Yes.
So rampantly, and then there's no bail. So the question here is everyone need to have their own defense when you go to the court. But when you delay all this and torture and force to confess and then non-bailable was imposed, and then every time when there is a, if, let's say if they fight in the magistrate court and then magistrate court throw away saying that there's not enough evidence, then they're going to appeal and appeal and appeal. Until then, until the whole thing ended, they're going to like be inside because of the non-bailable.
I didn't realize how long the process could take until I heard the experiences of some of the former detainees today. You know, a lot of the public think that this law cannot affect them. It doesn't affect them. It's so far away, removed from their world. It's only used for terrorists and, you know, mafia bosses and organized crime. What I learned today is that even, you know, it can come to you when you least expect it. How has that changed or shaped the way your advocacy to repeal this law, knowing that it's not used against the most hardened of crims?
Okay, so that's the point to it, right? Even the commissioner from Suhakam, he rightly pointed out, right, we didn't see any high rank mafia leader or gangster leader or terrorist leader were used. This law, they just use randomly in certain, some cases, and then used to arrest and close some cases. In some cases that we receive, they arrest them and then put few cases, additional cases, and try to close the case. So this is not the right way of the whole investigation nature.
Mm.
So that's another area.
And there were so many juveniles that are, so many minors that are impacted by this law. What has Suaram discovered about how it affects very young teens?
Yeah, so that's the point. When you have other usual circumstances, you use a penal code, right? So you target and hit. So you do some early investigation, and based on the evidences, you target certain individual and arrest them and brought to the magistrate. Here, you can target the whole group. So you wouldn't know whether these people really committed or not. So in that case, if a young boy follow his brother or whoever, and wrong time and a wrong place, he also can be arrested. And we have seen these cases, we have highlighted this so many times. Young people like 17, 18 years old also got arrested. Whereas this law supposed to be used against hardcore criminals, terrorists or organized crime, you know.
Yeah.
How a 16, 17, 18 years old can be a hardcore criminal.
And it affects their entire lives
exactly.
after that. One of the things that struck me also during the press conference was the testimony of Nur Rizwan, who is a former SOSMA detainee, who spent time behind, you know, incarcerated with, along with Anwar Ibrahim, the Prime Minister, now Prime Minister, who talked about this problematic law. What would you like this government to know about his experience, but also the intensity of needing to repeal this law?
Okay, we don't have to present the whole thing to the government because they know.
They know.
Many of them. like even his case is interesting because he have met the PMX when he was detained.
Mm-hmm.
And we also received some cases was referred by him, by PMX when he was inside. Go and see Suaram for this case, you know, SOSMA cases. And after he was released, he had a meeting immediately with the SOSMA detainees family members, and Suaram have attended, participated. So which means PMX have listened, have heard directly from the detainees, and he did not agree with the usage of SOSMA, and he have met the family members to listen to them. But now he has a PMX, he have the power. All we want is a reminder to him, you don't jeopardize or you don't delay this part of it, right, when you want to focus on other areas. This is also important. It can go simultaneously. We know the issue related to economy, brass and all other issues, but at the same time, you also can take this up simultaneously, and also we want to get the Home Minister to involve.
It needn't come at the expense of economic focus. Very quickly, Sivan, I want to ask you, reform the law, so that's improving, quote-unquote, the law as opposed to repealing it. Are you satisfied?
No. There are a few things we already identified, the problematic areas. If you take all that out in the name of reform, we are fine. And SOSMA don't carry any weightage anymore. So whether you wanted to continue use the SOSMA or not,
okay,
it's not sufficient enough to call it as a procedure.
Mm.
So these are the areas we will still demanding to be abolished, or even you wanted to amend, there's a way to amend, not like from 28 days you minus 5 days and then you go ahead.
So there are ways to do it to make sure that it reduces the harm.
Yep.
Thank you, Sivan, for speaking to me. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
That's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching, and good night.